Hello and welcome to another edition of our Gender Magazine 5050. This program is coming to you from West Africa Democracy Radio WADR in Dakar, Senegal. I'm Serif Bojang Jr. Thanks for joining us.
West Africa Democracy Radio. It's you speaking.
Hello and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of 5050. Every year in many parts of the world, Africa in particular, millions of girls and young women undergo female genital mutilation, FGM, or female genital cutting. This practice, which is more of tradition than anything else, involves the cutting of parts of the outer female genitalia. It is mostly carried out on young girls between infancy and the age of 15. As a result of the nature and manner in which girls and young women undergo this circumcision exercise, rights groups, feminists, and health experts worldwide have since categorized FGM as a harmful traditional practice that needs to be abandoned. In this edition of 5050, we will hear from campaigners on why people should turn their back on a tradition they have inherited from their mothers, grandmothers, and great-grandmothers.
Health implication of severe pain, of shock because of the pain.
If one knife or one blade is going to cut over 100 girls, you never know, it could also lead to HIV/AIDS.
They will also tell us how FGM violates the rights of a woman.
For me, it is a violation of human rights of girls and women in terms of their bodily integrity and bodily autonomy.
It's about her sexual rights, because why do you have to remove something that's supposed to give me pleasure?
Those who practice FGM say they cut part of the female genitalia to reduce a woman's sexual appetite, thereby controlling promiscuity. You will hear what gender activists make of this claim.
This is just one way to try to control women or to control girls and practice violence against them and continue to suppress them.
It has absolutely nothing to do with promiscuity. In fact, it is the opposite. Is not done to men, and men are promiscuous.
Well, that's a belief based on patriarchal principles of control of female sexuality. Because when you talk about promiscuity, you're talking about two actors being involved.
While anti-FGM campaigners are winning in their campaign in most countries where the practice is common, they have been under criticism from some people, mainly conservatives, who see the FGM campaign as a campaign of Westerners and urban elites. A Western advocate and an urban stakeholder will react to this view.
The fight against female genital mutilation is definitely not a Western-born fight. We support a lot of colleagues throughout Africa.
FGM is not a rural or urban phenomenon. It cuts across the whole fabric of society.
A lot of people have been calling on anti-FGM campaigners to consider providing alternative source of income to traditional circumcisors if they are to throw the knife. Campaigners will tell us what they think of this call.
For most practitioners, this is their form of livelihood. It's an income generation. In order for them to stop, you need to provide them with an alternate source of income, absolutely.
You cannot live on human blood. This is not what you do to live. Because you do not circumcise every day, and so you don't get earnings every day. So it cannot be a source of livelihood.
I think it is fair for them to be supported, to be able to keep a decent life.
And you will also hear about the societal stigma associated with FGM.
You know, if you married and you are not cut, people would not eat your meal, the meal you prepare, or drink the water you are offering.
All this coming up in this edition of 5050.
Hakili mayare malo musula kasekele, oh musulu sekele. Yo gudona he. Hakili mayare malo musula katoyole, oh musulu toyole.
In many sub-Saharan African states, including my birth country, the Gambia, the day a young girl is told that she is going to be circumcised is by far the most ecstatic and celebrated day of her young life. She is happy not because she looks forward to the pain, fear, and trauma that await her. She jumps with joy not because she is happy that one of the most exciting and stimulating natural parts of her body is about to be forcefully taken away from her. There is excitement in her innocent eyes because she is told that she is going to eat loads of bananas, apples and oranges, that she is going to dance to melodious beats from dusk to dawn and sing so childhood songs as Ba Ba Black Sheep. She dances because she is not told the truth, the whole truth. She is not told that she is about to lose a key part of her womanhood in the most gruesome and painful manner. She is not told that her right to dignity and integrity are about to be violated, and she jumps up and down because she is not told that her health is about to be put at risk. That young girl is the happiest girl in her community until she comes face to face with the realities on the ground. Out of fear, pain and betrayal of trust and confidence, she sits there on her own, crying for help, a help that is far too late to come. According to the World Health Organization, WHO estimation, between 100 and 140 million girls and women have experienced female genital mutilation or female genital cutting worldwide. It is estimated that up to 3 million girls in sub-Saharan Africa are mutilated or cut each year, with prevalence rate in some countries as high as 97%. Dr. Bennett Madunagu is the founder and head of Girls Power Initiative, GPI, a Nigeria-based organization that educates and promotes self-esteem among young women and girls. She explains how big a priority is FGM for GPI.
It is a very strong aspect of our work, and we actually do community outreach to stop the action in Nigeria, in the states where we operate in particular. In fact, we have also gotten the states where we operate, where the national headquarters of GPI is, and one other of our states to pass a law against FGM, which then gives us the tool to go into the communities to educate and stop FGM. Yes, it is one of a very strong aspect of violations of the rights of girls that we are working on. We do both theory, giving them the lessons in our centers and working with the government ministry of education from the federal to state schools to have this education in schools as well as in our 4 centers in the country.
For many decades, FGM has been a taboo subject that no one dared openly criticize in many African societies. But while campaigners succeed in breaking the barrier of secrecy, the issue is still treated with caution in some societies. Brima Fall is an international program officer at Tostan, a Dakar-based African community empowerment organization. He explains the Tostan FGM approach.
In Tostan, we have a non-formal education program based on human rights. It is that program that helps us address female genital cutting in devious way, because as you know, female genital cutting is part of some people's tradition, so it is very difficult to come overtly and say you're going to fight some people's tradition. So our non-formal education program consists of democracy, human rights, problem solving, hygiene and health. Especially when we talk about human rights or hygiene and health, it is where the populations, the people targeted to receive our program, realize that female genital cutting is an issue and is very harmful to people's health, women's and girls' health. So it is where they start wanting to abandon. About the non-formal education program, we have a class for adolescents, a class for adults, wherever we go. And to reinforce the classes, we have what we call a community management committee consisting of 17 members of the community who are kind of a government for the community. This community run awareness activities on female genital cutting, on all the issues, on all the subjects dealt with in the classroom. So in terms of social mobilization, they get the villagers together to address the issues that should be abandoned, like female genital cutting. Mm-hmm. So Dostan is not coming to say, hey, stop female genital cutting, but this is you know, something that will come from the villages but not from Dosta.
One of the main concerns about FGM is the health implications of the process. This is one of the main issues that trigger national and international condemnation of the practice. During the process, in most occasions, one knife or blade is used to cut multiple girls. It is estimated that over 100 million girls and women worldwide are currently living with the consequences of FGM. This is a worry for gender activists and health personnel. Jennifer Weiland is the Africa Program Officer for International Women's Health Coalition.
If female genital mutilation can result in anything from just bleeding, hemorrhaging, infection or sepsis, to psychological trauma, HIV infection or other STI infection is possible. Not just STIs, but other infections are possible, especially if you use the same laser on multiple girls. And death. I mean, this can absolutely result in death. There are three types of female genital mutilation, and with the third type, infibulation, that can result in obstruction during childbirth, which can also result in death. It can result in fistula and severe trauma. So there are many serious consequences.
Dr. Aissatou Touré is the executive director of the Gambia Committee Against Harmful Traditional Practices, GAMCOTRAP. She explains the health implications associated with FGM.
When you are caught, the first thing you do is lose blood. You are bleeding. That is very dangerous, and it could lead to fainting. You may also be anemic. At the same time also, you may be infected, because if one knife or one blade is going to cut over 100 girls, you never know. It could also lead to HIV/AIDS, because studies have shown that there is a correlation between HIV and AIDS and FGM because of the cutting with one knife and also the transfer of one blood to another victim. That is there. Then you come to the effect. It has a short, long, immediate effect, which is the bleeding, the shock, and the fainting that is going to happen. You have the intermediate, which might, because of something like, you may have some secondary infertility, infections, and so on. Then the long-term effect, when you come to deliver as a circumcised woman, your baby, you take longer to deliver from the studies we have done. You also are faced with a lot of physical pain because of the tightening of that area of the body.
For Bene, there is immediate health implications are caused by shock and bleeding.
There is immediate health implication of severe pain, of shock because of the pain, of serious bleeding, and this can end with tetanus and some bacterial infection because of the concoction that they grind and mix to stop the bleeding. That is not done in hospital. That is in the backyard of old women. And the fact that none of these old women circumcisers have studied anatomy to know exactly what they are cutting. So they cut many adjoining parts. So it is not just by talking about clitoridectomy, cutting the clitoris, excision, infibulation, and all of that. It is about cutting parts that they know nothing about, and so the danger. And the intermediate consequence of the urine retention, and we have seen many, the open sores of the, in the genital region and other injuries to the surrounding tissues. But the worst is knowing in Africa what it means for a woman not to, these long-term consequences is the most serious one, because there is not just only the recurrent bladder urinary tract infection, which will be invariably affect the reproductive system. There is the formation of cysts, which when it opens during labor, much of it, and while maternal mortality in Nigeria remains one of the highest, if not the highest in the world, has been the issue of hemorrhage during labor by women who have been circumcised. And of course, infertility as a result of infections that have taken place from the time that baby was circumcised until the baby grows up, and nobody knew that the cysts might have been blocked as a result of the infection using those unhygienic concoctions that they try to use to stop the bleeding. These are facts that we have seen here.
FGM is internationally recognized as a violation of the rights of girls and women. Several national and international laws and treaties have recognized that it violates a girl or woman's right to health, security, and physical integrity. In 1997, the World Health Organization with the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, and the UN Population Fund, UNDP, issued a joint statement against the practice of FGM. For Aissatou, FGM destroys a girl's trust and confidence in people.
When a young child is being told, you are going to be circumcised, you are not told that you are going to be cut. That's number one. She is being given very beautiful stories. I remembered when I was going to be circumcised, I was told you're going to eat bananas, you're going to eat oranges, you're going to drink milk, we're going to kill cows, we're going to do this and dance and so on. I was in a hurry, very much in a hurry to go on. But then, when it was done to me, I started asking myself, is that so? And I never trusted the woman who was telling me that. So first, it's infringement on the bodily dignity and integrity of the girl child or the woman. Number two, it has also destroyed the confidence that the woman had. And in any case, it was not her choice. Also, it's about her sexual rights. Because why do you have to remove something that's supposed to give me pleasure? You know, these are all issues that need to... So it's about the abuse of the child, in all its entirety. So this is the reason why we are discussing it from a point of view of rights, of course taking into considerations some of the issues like health, tradition.
As far as Benin is concerned, FGM is a violation of a girl's bodily integrity and autonomy.
For me, it is a violation of human rights of girls and women in terms of their bodily integrity and bodily autonomy, which is guaranteed by conventions, so many agreements, that our country has even ratified, from the global through the regional, through our country constitution, the protection of the rights of girls and women. And for me, it's like a war on the woman's body, on the female's body. And it is nothing but a deep-rooted gender inequality in practice. For me, it violates the victim's right to health, because it has serious impact on health from the work we have done. It violates the victim's right to security and physical integrity. It violates the right to be free from torture, because this is torture. When you see what is being done and how the female entails that 70 people are pressed down in a very unhygienic situation, it is therefore a violation of their right to be free from torture, to be free from cruel and inhuman degrading treatment, which is what it is. It also impinges on the right to life, because there are instances when the procedure has resulted in death. So all of this are what FGM really is in terms of violations to the human rights of girls and women.
FGM is influenced heavily by traditions and traditional beliefs. In societies where infidelity or sex without marriage is a key issue, those who practice FGM often say they do it because it reduces or controls promiscuity. They say that when the most exciting part of a woman's genitalia is cut, she loses a great deal of sexual appetite, and in that way, she won't be promiscuous. But Jennifer disagrees.
There's absolutely no evidence to support that at all. And I think really the underlying reason why people practice this is due to gender inequality. I mean, this is a form of violence against women and girls that's been going on for a long time, and at its root is gender inequality, really. So this is just one way to try to control women or to control girls and practice violence against them and continue to suppress them. But there's absolutely no evidence that shows that this reduces, you know, promiscuity, or, I mean, it's all kind of folklore.
For Aissatou, the claim that FGM reduces promiscuity is gender biased.
Well, that's a belief based on patriarchal principles of control of female sexuality. Because when you talk about promiscuity, you're talking about two actors being involved. So when they talk about women's promiscuity, I think it's gender biased. It's all based on patriarchal principles of control, on controlling the woman. It has nothing to do with that. But one of the factors that are pushed or talked about is that it reduces women's desire to have sex. And for that matter, I think that is against the sexual rights of the woman.
According to Bene, the promiscuity claim is in fact the opposite.
It is not true. Here in Nigeria, we have proven beyond reasonable doubt that it is not true. Because one of the tribes, one of the states that has almost 100% of HGM happens to be the one that provides over 80% of girls that are trafficked for prostitution in Europe. In other words, it has absolutely nothing to do with promiscuity. In fact, it is the opposite. I'm saying that girls who, whereas FGM is said to be done to prevent promiscuity, whatever that means, because it's not done to men, and men are promiscuous. In those states, for instance, Delta State, these states are states that we work in this area, and over 70% of girls trafficked for prostitution in Europe are from those states. And they have been confessed. They have had female genital mutilation on them.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling
apart from the belief that it reduces promiscuity, different communities practice FGM for different other reasons. Most of the beliefs are either linked to tradition or religion, Aisatu explains.
It's about belonging to your culture. It's about being an ideal woman. All is all placed under the whole issue of the sexual construction of the woman as a sex object. Why do you have to control or cut the clitoris of a woman in order to prevent her from being what she is? How many ethnic groups are there that are not subjected to female genital mutilation, who are respected in their culture, who are also not promiscuous? So promiscuity has nothing to do with the body of the woman. It's attitudinal and circumstantial. So I believe that female genital mutilation should not be the excuse to cut the woman because you don't want her to be promiscuous. It takes two to tango anyway.
Bene says some practice FGM because they believe it purifies a woman's body.
Some other belief is that it makes the woman's body clean, making the woman's body beautiful, and leaves the same. Because when you remove the parts from the woman's body that is unclean or is male-like, then you have beautified the female. Again, this is so nonsensical because we are talking about the human body here. We are talking about the natural biological part of a normal human body that is being removed. What they mean by cleansing or making it beautiful, it makes no sense. What I believe is that it is linked to religious history or religion, but we know that there is, and we have proven this in many communities, we have in our training, that there is no religious script anywhere that prescribes the practice. And of course, when we have proven all of this, then they fall back on, oh, it's cultural, it's traditional, and so they use that. But we know that cultures change on daily basis, let alone over time. There is nothing that is concrete, and we try to prove this each time we do trainings, and each time we have sessions with communities. And so there is no community that we have gone to in the last 15 years. Every year we choose one rural community where it is evident that it's being carried out and do work there. And they end up actually not only a law within that community against it, but they set up monitoring committees that we also monitor from our office that it has stopped.
Because of several strong beliefs associated with FGM, girls or women who do not undergo the practice are normally stigmatized or looked low upon in many societies. According to Birima Fall of Tostan, sometimes people would refuse to eat food cooked by a woman who is not cut.
That female genital cutting is a social norm, like many social norms that exist. People are born and have seen that their parents are practicing, or their relatives. It is something they cannot really explain because it is there, it is here, and you have to abide by the law of society if you don't want to be socially dead. You see? So those who are not cut, you may know, are sometimes ostracized. Even, you know, if you're married and you're not cut, people would not eat your meal, the meal you prepare, or drink the water you're offering. So it is kind of that social death that people, you know, want to avoid. This is the reason why mostly they practice without, you know, knowing why they're practicing.
While anti-FGM campaign is gaining more and more strength in many parts of sub-Saharan Africa over the past few years, the campaign is described in some quarters as a Western or urban idea. Critics say the campaign is waged by people from Europe or America, and educated urban women in Africa merely to unnecessarily interfere in African cultures and traditions. But Jennifer doesn't think so.
First, I want to say that the fight against female genital mutilation is definitely not a Western-born fight. We support a lot of colleagues throughout Africa who are actively trying to eradicate this practice, and that's being led by them. That's not being led by us. Like, they view this as a serious, serious human rights violation, and it's them trying to eradicate it.
For Aissatou, the FGM phenomenon cuts across the whole fabric of the society, and it's just not an urban issue.
With the activists going into the communities, I just want to tell you that FGM is not a rural or urban phenomenon. It cuts across the whole fabric of society. You have in Banjul people circumcising their daughters in Serekunda, in Bakau. You go to Koina, you go to Basai, it's the same thing happening. So it's a general fabric that has been part of the culture of the people, and we have a Herculean task of dealing with them. Now, in the rural areas, most of them don't have access to TV, they are not literate, they don't have newspapers, so they are very unlikely to read certain reasons why it should stop. So that is why AMCOTRAP is emphasizing going to the rural communities, reaching out to them, educating them and sharing the experience, learning from them what they think and why should it continue or not continue. And we can only do that by having community sensitization, radio programs, having focus group discussions, and also using different forms of media, traditional media like theater, drama, songs, and dances, to educate them so that they would stop. So it's not that there is a divide. This cuts across all classes.
Many of those who perform FGM on girls are old women with no medical knowledge and sometimes with no source of income. In FGM, they see not just an adventure but also a career in which they eke out a living. Some people argue at different platforms that those people should be given an alternative source of livelihood if they are to abandon the cutting of girls and women. GAMCOTRAP has in fact put in place projects for those circumcisers who through the night, as Aissatou explains.
For many of the studies that we have done with the circumcisers throughout the country, this is not their primary source of living, but it's as a subsidiary. They gain some amount of money where they use to give lunch to their children, buy soap to wash, and also contribute to their day-to-day living. Now, looking at that aspect, we thought it would be better, because also they are from the poorest of the poor. Women are considered poor, but they are the poorest of the poor. So we started a project generating alternative for circumcisers.
Jennifer is also of the view that women who abandon the cutting deserve to be provided with an alternative source of income.
I think that's an excellent point, and it's something that's not being addressed. I mean, for most practitioners, this is a form of, when I say practitioners, I mean traditional practitioners, oftentimes elder women. This is their form of livelihood. It's an income generation method. So in order for them to stop, you need to provide them with an alternate source of income, absolutely.
Contrary to Jennifer and Isaac, Benny says a female cutting is not a career and that circumcisers should not be given alternative source of income because they in fact live on human blood.
You cannot live on human blood. This is not what you do to live, because you do not circumcise every day, and so you don't get earnings every day. So it cannot be a source of livelihood. Majority of them are farmers, they are traders, I will prove to them. So you can take small loan and increase your trading and your family, then you will stop living on people's blood.
With that, we round up this edition of 50/50. Join me the same time next week for another edition of your gender magazine. From me, Sharif Bojang Jr., and on behalf of the whole WADR crew, thanks for listening and bye-bye.
Home is a place where I'm at peace. A paradise safe. so serene.